Right now we're going to head over to Arizona, where tomorrow the Dodgers will open up at Camelback Ranch against the Chicago White Sox. That'll be a 12 o'clock start here on the West Coast. So if you're a big Dodger fan, that's exactly when the ball game starts tomorrow, 12:05. A guy that's covered the Dodgers now for a number of years does a great job. One of the reasons I buy the LA Times each and every day, including on Sunday, is this guy right here, Dylan Hernandez of the LA Times, joining us on the Mighty 1090. Dylan, welcome. How are you?
Hey, great. Hey, thank you so much for having me on. I'm a longtime fan of yours, actually. I used to listen to, like, your high school, show, like, late at night. You know, I grew up in Los Angeles, so this is actually, like, a huge, huge thrill for me.
Well, hey, it's great to have you on, Dylan. I'm an admirer of your work as well, and you've been doing this for a number of years now. You do a great job of covering the Dodgers. Of course, with the Dodgers, there's always a story to be told, isn't there?
Yeah, it's been, I think a lot of it just, you know, it's kind of big market, so people kind of tend to kind of overreact to every little bit of news. You know, obviously this offseason, there were a lot of sweeping changes kind of in the front office in terms of kind of the direction this team was going in. And, you know, the traditional baseball fan, I think, is kind of a little bit upset right now that the Dodgers lost, you know, Matt Kemp, for example, to the Padres. So, you know, I think this season's going to be, whichever way it goes, I think there's going to be quite a bit of reaction over here and or over there in Los Angeles.
You know, Dylan, I realize Matt Kemp's making a lot of money, and the Dodgers have a lot of money still on that payroll. But, you know, even for a guy that's a lifelong Padre fan, a guy that does the post-game show, I still can't believe the Dodgers traded Matt Kemp to the Padres.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I remember I was down, one of the San Diego shows at the winter meetings. And, you know, I think a couple of days before the trade actually happened, they asked me, do you think it's going to happen? And I said, no. And they asked me, why not? And I said, because it's stupid. You know, so, I think last year there were only 11 players that hit 30 home runs. So, you know, especially in this era of, you know, of drug testing, you know, the power is really at a premium. And even though I kind of understand the, you know, the concerns about Kemp's defense, yeah, I was a little bit surprised. You know, I think that really what this was about, though, you know, when you kind of look at the Dodgers and just kind of the payroll and how it lines up, this wasn't, you know, really so much about this season as much as it was about, you know, the 2018 payroll. I think the management was really concerned that what you had here was, you know, a bunch of players on, you know, on long-term contracts and that they would all get old together. You know, I don't think that they minded having the big, you know, big contracts on, you know, on there. I think the concern was that these guys all kind of fit in the same age range and that as they got older, they would all get old together. You know, I think they wanted these contracts to be spread out a little bit more, in terms of, you know, having diversity of, you know, age-wise.
Dylan Hernandez, our guest here on the Mighty 1090. You know, I think there are a lot of question marks regarding the Dodgers. And I would start in left field with Carl Crawford. Had a good year when he's able to play, but he gets nicked up quite a bit. Jock Peters, from what I saw him, and I realized, you know, he was the MVP of the PCL and put up unbelievable numbers. And some of those things he did hadn't been done for, you know, 50 years, but only 4-for-28 at the big league level. And when I saw him play on television a little bit, Dylan, I mean, he looked a little bit overmatched, and his swing looked long, and, of course, you got Puig out there, and he's still learning how to play at the big league level. Then you got the veteran Andre Ethier wanting to play, and right now it looks like he's the fourth outfielder again and the left-handed pinch hitter off the bench.
Yeah, you know, and I think if Peterson sticks, we won't be seeing Ethier here that much longer. You know, and going back to Peterson, you're right. You know, he did put up these great numbers. You know, he was, like you said, the first 30-30 player there, in that league in quite some time. The other statistic that really sticks out from his AAA season, though, 149 strikeouts. That's quite a bit of strikeouts, you know, in a hitter-friendly league. I mean, you project that to the major league level, you know, this is a guy that could strike out conceivably between 170 and 200 times. That's quite a bit. Like you said, Carl Crawford, the injuries there. You know, and it's kind of funny that, you know, of all the outfielders, the guy that you look is kind of being the most stable one is Yasiel Puig, who obviously has had some ups and downs in his career.
Hey, what's it like dealing with Puig? Is he a pretty good guy for you to deal with?
You know, I think a lot of the, I'm not saying that Puig's an angel, but I think a lot of the frustration or a lot of the, you know, the kind of the perception that's out there of him is kind of a result of some reporters not being able to speak Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I speak Spanish. He's always been actually very almost too polite, you know, to where you're kind of like, all right, you know, I know this isn't really you, that type of thing. You know, but I find that I've always found him to actually be like a fairly respectful, you know, kind of, you know, he likes to joke around, you know, today, you know, up until today, I had this Abraham Lincoln beard that I, you know, that I just shaved off yesterday. And when I showed up to the clubhouse today, what'd you do to your face? You know, and I think he's just kind of a kid. You know, I don't think that there's much malice there. You know, I think, he is impulsive, which kind of leads to him sometimes making bad decisions both on and off the field. But, you know, you don't get the feeling that he's really like a malicious guy. And, you know, so far in camp, he's been showing up to, you know, fairly early, you know, as opposed to last year when he was kind of like, you know, running into the clubhouse right before the team meeting started. You know, he told me, you know, maybe it was a week or two ago that he wanted to be the LeBron James or the Kobe Bryant of baseball. You know, we talked about Derek Jeter retiring and now, you know, there being this kind of vacancy for the face of the sport. You know, he listed off some of the guys that he thought could be that, you know, Clayton Kershaw, obviously Mike Trout, Miguel Cabrera. And he says, you know, I want to be one of those guys. You know, and I know it's only been 2 weeks, you know, week and a half of camp. And it is a little bit early, but, you know, so far he's kind of, he does seem to be kind of getting it a little bit more, you know. So, you know, I'm not necessarily convinced that this is going to stretch out over the course of a 6 month season. You know, that requires a lot of emotional endurance, which, you know, I'm not really sure he has, and maybe he does. You know, I think we'll find out, you know, in the coming months. But, you know, at this point, I think his head is kind of in the right place. And obviously, you know, from a physical standpoint, he's, you know, his talent is really unmatched, I think, with maybe the exception of Trout in all of baseball.
We're visiting with Dylan Hernandez, who covers the Dodgers for the Los Angeles Times. New double play combination. This is not exactly a double play combination. I think at the end of last year, you and I could have sat at a table, had lunch, and envisioned Jimmy Rollins coming over from the Phillies and Howie Kendrick coming from the Angels to be the Dodgers' second sacker.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, I think Rollins obviously kind of brings us, in addition to being, you know, even last year at the age of 35, he's still rated as an above average defender at shortstop. You know, he replaces Hanley Ramirez, who is basically a statue there. Now, Ramirez did have the bat, so, you know, and I think that really, you know, you look at a lot of what they did this offseason, everything kind of started with Hanley Ramirez. You know, obviously in the National League, you don't have a designated hitter, so the Dodgers weren't going to give Hanley Ramirez the kind of four-year deal that he got from Boston. And once Ramirez left that lineup, I think they looked at this team and they said, okay, are we going to continue to just be able to outslug teams? You know, we just lost what is arguably our best bat. You know, maybe we should pivot a little bit. And I think that's what the team did. We saw definitely over the, you know, course of the offseason, an increased emphasis on defense. And Rollins and Kendrick are definitely a huge part of that.
You know, Dylan, I look at Adrian Gonzalez, and of course, you know, we saw Adrian down here really get his career on track before he got traded to Boston, now with L.A., and, you know, he's having a great career and just a model of consistency year in and year out at one corner for the Dodgers. I look over at the other corner, it always seems like they're trying to run Juan Uribe out, but all that guy does is continue to find a way to swing the bat, and, boy, he had a good year last year, hitting well over 300 with 9 homers and 54 ribbies.
Yeah, you know, and I think with Uribe, kind of the key is really, again, the defense. You know, it all kind of starts there. I think that really they kind of view, you know, what he does offensively as kind of a bonus. And you're right about Gonzalez being consistent. You know, and with him, it all kind of starts in the offseason, I think, with just kind of the preparation that he does there. You know, a few years ago, he started training with Chris Bird.
Right.
You know, former heavyweight boxing champion who's also based out of San Diego. You know, and this year, you know, Adrian, for the first time, spent the offseason in Los Angeles, and he went to the Wild Card Gym in Hollywood, which is the same gym at which Manny Pacquiao trained. And actually, you know, the guy that actually trained him is the trainer for Ruslan Provodnikov, a former 140-pound champion. So he's getting legitimate training. You know, he's training alongside, you know, boxers who, you know, I think if you kind of look at, like, the overall package of fitness are, you know, have to rank them on the top of all athletes. And, you know, you kind of see it too in Gonzalez's physique. He's definitely lighter. And, you know, Gonzalez is definitely conscious of the fact that he's getting older now. You know, he understands that he has to do extra things to be able to kind of keep this all up. And I think, you know, his feeling is that, you know, as long as I can stay on the field, you know, I'm going to, you know, hit my 20 plus home runs and drive in my 100 runs. And I think the team feels that way too. Gonzalez is definitely the thing that, you know, he is the kind of center of the lineup in some way. You know, I think that there are a lot of variables when you look up and down that lineup. The one thing I think that Don Mattingly feels he can count on is Adrian Gonzalez.
Dylan, Yasmani Grandal coming over in the deal for Matt Kemp. They re-signed A.J. Ellis, and A.J. Ellis had a miserable season swinging the bat last year, but a solid defensive catcher in the past. He'd been a pretty good clutch performer. And, you know, Clayton Kershaw loves throwing to this guy. Is he going to become Clayton Kershaw's personal catcher?
You know, right now the team is saying he's not, but Grandal himself recently said that, yeah, he thought that, you know, Ellis would could catch the majority of his games. You know, one thing that's actually been a lot of fun to watch, you know, both, you know, actually Grandal and Ellis last year had knee injuries, you know, and I think the feeling was that that affected Grandal hitting from the right side, you know, and that just affected, you know, Ellis period just hitting. And you can kind of tell both guys are healthy right now just by watching them in batting practice. Because it's actually been kind of fun watching these guys. They're hitting some towering shots out there. Huh. And, you know, even, and it's kind of for the first time, what we're seeing too is some catching depth, you know, where, you know, one of the players that they got in the trade with the Marlins was Austin Barnes. You know, he can sting the ball pretty well. And I think, you know, there's this perception maybe that, okay, they got rid of Kemp. They're actually trying to trim payroll, but they're actually, you know, already on pace to actually surpass where they were last year payroll wise. You know, and you might not see because there are a lot of like hidden costs, but what we see really is, you know, maybe at that level, you know, say from like the bench on down, you know, into maybe the AAA level, there's definitely an increased investment there. So, you know, if one of those guys happens to go down, I think that they feel that they'll be able to plug in holes a little bit easier than they have been able to in the past.
You know, Dylan, you were mentioning earlier, if Jock Peterson won that center field spot, that, you know, Ethier probably wouldn't be around. It seems like to me they're already kind of looking for help. They picked up Chris Heisey, and, of course, they got a guy that's been a really nice platoon player. And whenever he's been given the opportunity, he's done a good job, in Scott Van Slyke. So they've actually got some depth if they were to let Ethier go.
Yeah, and I actually think that Heisey and Van Slyke will be on the team regardless of who wins the center field job. You know, both guys hit right-handed. You know, Ethier and Peterson both hit left-handed. And I kind of envision a scenario where, you know, we're going to see Van Slyke a lot in left field on, you know, instead of Crawford on days when the Dodgers are facing a lefty. I think ideally they would like Peterson in center field on most days. But again, if there's a right-handed, a left-handed pitcher, you know, where we're going to see Chris Heisey in there. They do like Heisey, you know, and the one, say, you know, if Peterson doesn't win the job, my guess is that they'll, you know, again, they'll play Puig in center field again. They'll have Ethier in right, in which case, you know, Heisey can plug in right field on days that they're facing a left-handed pitcher. So that's like in Heisey, I definitely see making this team.
Hey, does Justin Turner have a spot on this roster?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, he was you talked about surpassing your expectations. He was kind of like a pleasant surprise, I think, all last season. You know, I think as of now, unless something really major happens, he's absolutely on this team. You know, that said, there's going to be, again, you know, like I said, they have more depth now. You know, they really like Kike Hernandez, one of the players that they got from, Miami. And he's a guy that can play. He can play every outfield position. He can play pretty much every infield position. You know, now that said, he has minor league options, meaning that they can send him down to the minors without passing him through waivers. So my guess is that he probably, just because they can keep one guy and, you know, easier than the other, my guess is that he'll probably start the season in the minor leagues. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Darwin Barney has a pretty good year. You know, here's a guy who, with the glove is really fantastic. You know, offensively, maybe he's not quite there, but, he's a guy that might push Turner a little bit for one of those final bench spots.
Dylan Hernandez, our guest here on the Mighty 10-9. Let's talk about the pitching. Obviously, you got the big three in Kershaw, Greinke, Ryu. I know he's been battling a little bit of a stiff back right now. And then they signed Brandon McCarthy. They bring in Brett Anderson. McCarthy had his struggles in Arizona at the beginning of last year. Got traded to the Yankees. Pitched absolutely out of his mind there. And so he gets a nice deal with the Dodgers. And Brett Anderson, when he's been healthy, he's been pretty good. But last few years, had a hard time staying on the mound.
Yeah, you know, and I think you look at both of those guys. I mean, that's kind of, I think, you know, you talk about the big question marks on the team. That's probably the single biggest one. McCarthy's had chronic shoulder problems. It's a shoulder blade issue, actually. And, You know, what happened last year? Last year, McCarthy, I think, pitched 200 innings for the first time in his career. What he has happened is that he basically started lifting weights more in the off season, strengthened the muscles around the shoulder blade, and that basically led to there being, you know, less stress on that shoulder blade, and that's why he thinks he was able to stay healthy. So the Dodgers, you know, checked him out medically. They listened to that narrative, and they're thinking, okay, this makes sense. You know, Anderson, he had some fluky injuries recently. You know, he broke a finger swinging a bat. There was a broken foot at some point. You know, I think, and then recently there was a back thing. You know, he had a back surgery over the off season that he's still recovering from. But he hasn't had any arm issues over the last 3 years. So I think when the Dodgers kind of looked at these two guys, they thought, okay, you know, even though these guys haven't, you know, pitched much in the past, we think they can stay healthy. And I think that these are the two things that are going to be real keys. You know, personally, I'm kind of in the belief that some people just tend to be more fragile than others, you know, and that if it's not one thing, it's going to be something else type thing. What the Dodgers are thinking is, okay, you know, these are, you know, as long as it's not a specific arm type issue with the shoulder or the elbow, we're going to be okay with it. So, you know, they're taking a bit of a chance here. You know, obviously Andrew Friedman, you know, he was the GM in Tampa. They were always kind of, you know, found ways to stay competitive in a small market kind of by being ahead of the curve. You know, Farhan Zaidi, the general manager now, he came from Oakland where they kind of had to do the same thing. So I think they're kind of viewing these two guys as, you know, shrewd buys. We'll see if they're right.
Okay, Kenley Jansen, he's not going to be able to start the year, right?
Yeah, he won't. He'll probably miss about a month.
Okay, miss a month. Who's going to be their closer on opening day against the Padres?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of tough. They really don't have many guys there with experience. You know, they have Sergio Santos in camp and, you know, David Arzma. Both of those guys have saved 30 games in the past, but again, recent injury problems. We're not quite sure if they're the same guys that they were before. You know, I think if one of those guys are healthy, we could see one of them. You know, J.P. Howell's closed games in the past, but, you know, he's a kind of a soft-tossing lefty, so doesn't really profile as a closer. You know, one candidate that I think, even though he's, again, hasn't had real closing experience, is Chris Hatcher. He's one of these guys that came, again, in that Marlins trade where they sent Dee Gordon and Dan Heron over there. You know, and Hatcher is a guy that throws 90-plus. Like Kenley Jansen, he's a converted catcher, so he doesn't have many miles on that arm. And, you know, again, just because I think his stuff, you know, is what you think of a closer stuff, I wouldn't be surprised if he wound up getting the shot.
Well, they're signing enough for relievers over the last week. I saw they signed Chad Godin. They signed Mike Adams. And if Mike's right, boy, he's tough. And Godin, if he can have his control, he can be tough for short periods of time also.
Yeah, and, you know, Dustin McGowan, too. He's another guy with, you know, a bunch of injuries recently. Brandon Beachy, although, you know, Beachy's more of a starter, obviously. But, you know, when I think, yeah, they have been signing a lot of these kind of, you know, and if you, again, if you count, you know, Sergio Santos and Arzma, you know, that gives them a pretty good group of guys here who used to be really good, who've had injury problems. You know, I think their hope is that one or two of these guys hit. You know, and that because when they're healthy, they have been very good. It's not a question of are they good or not. The question is, can they stay on the field? And I think the Dodgers basically figured, you know what, let's just go out and get a bunch of these guys. We have the money. Let's just spend it. You know, hopefully one or two of these guys can stay healthy. And if we do, we have a really good pitcher in our hands. And you know, so, again, I think that the way the Dodgers are spending money is just kind of changed. You know, they've kind of gone from – you know, obviously when the new ownership came initially, they went out, just grabbed all the big names they possibly could. Now I think they're kind of changing the way they're spending that money.
Hey, Dylan, last question. I'll let you get out of here. And great job of giving us a really thorough scouting report on the Dodgers. They, you mentioned this ownership came in. They've spent a ton of money, well over $200 million last year. You said they're going to spend more this year. Stan Kasten, he brings in a whole new group of people in the front office. Is Don Mattingly the manager to take the Dodgers to the next level? And what I mean by that, to win a world championship?
You know, I always kind of think back to, you know, my days covering, you know, covering soccer. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with Eric Winalda. He had one point, you know, he played at San Diego.
Yeah.
When he was the all-time leading scorer for the U.S. national team. You know, I remember one time he told me, players win games coaches lose them, referees ruin them. You know? So I think it's really going to come down to the players. You know, I know we kind of like to say, you know, I mean, I think over the course of a 162-game season, realistically, you know, it's probably one or two games that they're going to make a difference in. I really think it's going to kind of come down to the players. You know, and if you ask me kind of what the key is, it's going to be, you know, again, whether those back, you know, the guys in the back end of the rotation, McCarthy and Anderson can stay healthy. If the bullpen can kind of come together, that was a weak point last year. You know, I think if those things happen, I think that they have a good chance to win. You know, and I think that a lot of times kind of what happens, you know, in terms of managerial decisions, whether or not to keep a manager, a lot of it's kind of the public narrative. You know, I think that fans kind of do believe, like, you know, my team can win if we had the right guy in charge. I mean, I think that's just kind of the natural optimism that a fan has. And, you know, again, it's, you know, this is a business. They have to sell tickets. They have to have people watch their games. And sometimes, you know, the manager is just the guy that happens to get blamed for it when it just really is about the players not executing. So, you know, again, I think it really kind of comes down to the health of the pitcher.
Hey, Dylan, great job. Have a great spring training, and we'll look forward to seeing you here early in the season.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Dylan Hernandez, who covers the Los Angeles Dodgers for the LA Times, does a great job. Very nice to have him.